DW Africa Link.
On a fateful day, 10th June 2024, the skies turned hostile and tragedy struck Malawi at 10,000 feet. A routine flight, a Malawian Defense Force Donia 228, ended in catastrophe, claiming the life of the Vice President, Saulos Chilima, former First Lady Patricia Chanil Muluzi, and seven other occupants, crashed in Chikangawa Forest Reserve in Kanta Bay District. All on board died in Malawi's deadliest aviation accident en route from Lilongwe to Mzuzu Airport in the northern region to attend a funeral. This was a moment that shook the nation to its core. So what role did the weather play? And could this have been avoided? Let's delve into the chilling details of a crash that shook a nation. Stay tuned. My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
The report on the plane crash that killed Malawi's Vice President Saulos Chilima 6 months ago has finally been released and cites that bad weather and human error caused the crash, ruling out foul play. The military plane crashed in cloudy and windy conditions on June 10, causing high-velocity injuries that killed everyone on board on impact, according to the findings of a commission of inquiry read out live on local television. Chilima was a popular figure in Malawi, particularly among young people, but had a strained relationship with President Lazarus Chakwera. His United Transformation Movement, UTM, party expressed concern over the circumstances surrounding Chilima's death and demanded the inquiry. Do Malawians accept the findings? Joining me for this discussion is DW's correspondent Miriam Kaliza and Kumbo Soko, a political analyst and lawyer by profession in Malawi. I'll start with you, Miriam, as our reporter on ground. What has been the general reaction of Malawians to this inquiry's findings? Is there widespread agreement with the conclusion of bad weather and human error, or are there lingering suspicions of foul play still?
The general feeling is obviously divided. People are divided on the findings, while others are obviously expressing dissatisfaction, stating that the findings are raising more questions than answers. Others have also accepted the findings. So even if the findings were different, we're going to have a divide still. Others would accept it, others would not. So currently, I would say, yeah, there are dissenting views.
And now, Kumbo, you are a lawyer by profession. What would you make of this inquiry's findings?
So first of all, I think they tried their best in what was obviously a very difficult environment, politically charged environment. And I thought that the time that they were given was unreasonably short. It never made sense to me why they needed to finish their work within 30 days. Maybe they could have done with more time. And then the format, this is a structural problem. The format is they invite people and then they interact with them. Now, if you look at other inquiries in other jurisdictions, what will usually happen is that the inquiry itself will have counsel who will pretty much cross-examine the witnesses in a very methodical way. If you look at the composition of the commission, of course, it had some lawyers and, you know, chaired by a judge who would have experience examining witnesses, and it was being serviced by two lawyers as well who were acting as secretaries. But because the proceedings weren't open to the public, I'm not entirely sure how robust the examination of the witnesses and the fact was. But I think one gets the impression that perhaps it could have been more forensic, more invasive, more in-depth. And that can only happen when you are adopting a little bit of, I think, professional skepticism, which, listening to the report, doesn't seem to have come out, as robustly. I think it's fair to say that the commission was willing to accept at face value whatever it was that it was told, and that could perhaps be a function of the structure and the approach that they took in gathering evidence as well as examining and testing the accuracy of that evidence. So right.
And what legal recourse, Kumbo, if any, can be pursued against those responsible for the human errors cited in the inquiry?
So the human errors have been attributed to the crew, and these are public servants, the employees of the Malawi Defence Force. And so the families of those that perished in that tragedy can pursue the Malawi Defence Force, in brackets the Attorney General, for some sort of redress or compensation in negligence. Because ultimately, the responsibility was with the Malawi Defence Force to make sure that not only did they supply a plane that was fit for purpose, but also a crew that was equal to the task. And if from the evidence that appears not to have been the case, then you possibly could sue them with negligence.
Kumbo, when we look at the political landscape and even the legal environment in Malawi, what mechanisms really can ensure such inquiries are free from political interference?
It's almost maybe impossible to make such kind of a demand or to have such kind of an expectation. I think, especially when you look at the subject matter of the investigation and the principal person who perished in the accident, you really can't free this kind of process from politics. But I thought an attempt could still have been made to insulate it from this kind of political drama that it's now found itself in. If an international panel had been assembled, they could have asked for expertise from governments and other international agencies such as the UN. There is precedence. I think when you look at, for instance, the inquiry into the assassination of Hariri of Lebanon, I think it was an international panel, so something like of that sort. If they had assembled an international panel, because then no one would have accused these people of being party royalist or wanting to do the president or the current administration any kind of favors. And I think maybe moving forward, maybe it's a learning point that when you have a process that is politically toxic like this one, you then try to take it outside of municipal politics, domestic politics, by bringing in international experts, so that at least if they come up with conclusions, you can say, well, they weren't trying to do anyone any favors.
Now, Miriam, now back to the reactions. We've always been seeing the late vice president's wife posting a lot on Facebook. She misses her husband. It's normal. It's a hard pill to swallow. But how have the families of Vice President Saulos Chilima and other victims responded to this inquiry report? I don't know if there's been any reports already, if they're satisfied with the findings or they're seeking further investigation or accountability.
It's really chaotic, I should say, because maybe the families might not come out in the open and express their worry or fear. What is happening now, the report also indicated that some families received their post-mortem reports or results. Others did not. Others were given this, others were not given. So maybe from the social media reactions, people are just throwing stones everywhere and saying all sorts of things. But maybe officially they haven't, or they will, now that the report is out and it was also investigating or taking case by case of those people that perished in that crash. But it's really a hard pill to swallow to all those families. We haven't heard anything from Mary Shirima herself because usually she's going to talk through her Facebook page, expressing how she misses her husband or counting down to how many months have gone by without the husband and stuff like that. But since the report came out, she hasn't reacted anywhere and she hasn't spoken to any local media outlet. So we can only say that it's still maybe had a thing to express, but
And speaking of the local media, Miriam, how are they covering the inquiry report? Are they probing deeper into its findings, or has the story largely been accepted as resolved?
Not really resolved. They're still asking experts, the local media is asking local experts maybe to also weigh in on the findings according to their expertise, and also getting views from random Malawians on how they feel about the report or the findings, and if they feel that's a real truth. But I mean, the real truth can only be accepted on a personal level. Like I said before, that others are okay with the report findings, others are not, because maybe they have already a preconceived mind. But the local media is trying to really speak to experts from within and beyond.
Now, Kumbo, the Malawian president, Lazarus Chakwera, I'm sure he's the commander-in-chief of the defense forces, and this was a defense plane that crashed. Now, who bears liability for the crash, and what avenues exist for compensating the families of the victims? Are there gaps in Malawi's aviation laws that need to be addressed following this tragedy?
The gaps are obviously there. So first of all, this was a military aircraft. The law that we have, our aviation laws, mostly focus on civil aviation, so you know, commercial aircrafts, and so there's a bit of a regulatory gap in that military aircraft, even though they sometimes stray into the commercial space, because I think as the commission has made clear, people are able to actually charter these military planes, and yet they don't necessarily seem to fall under the purview of civilian authorities in terms of how they're regulated. So I think we may have to revisit this area and then make some changes to say if military aircraft are actually operating like commercial aircraft, how should they be regulated? Should they be allowed, for instance, to carry passengers when they don't have flight data recorders or cockpit voice recorders, which can aid investigations in the event of a crash? And I think those are some of the gaps that have been exposed by this inquiry. As to the question of ultimate responsibility, well, yeah, the president is a commander in chief, so ultimately the buck stops at him. But to be fair to the president, I think these are operational issues for which he may not necessarily bear, primary or personal responsibility. I think it's quite obvious that some of the things that have been exposed by this inquiry are, systemic, failures which date back to decades, actually, way before he became president. The neglect of, equipment that transports VVIPs, the neglect of maintenance of, key infrastructure like airports, lack of proper systems that can respond to national emergencies. This may have happened on his watch, but I think it would be unfair to assign 100% blame to him. I think it's quite fair to say that he possibly inherited systems that were broken, or in some other instances, totally non-existent. The extent to which him now, as being the president for the past 4 years, has taken steps to address those gaps, I think that is a legitimate subject of inquiry.
Right, but then when you speak to a lot of Malawians, Kumbo, you're also a political analyst, they say There's been bad blood between President Lazarus Chakwera and the late Vice President Saulos Chilima before the crash. Yeah, I would understand if you say that the blame must not go to the president, because the inquiry says, the inquiry report says it was due to bad weather and human error. But that question needs to be addressed, right? He's been president for 4 years. Has he not looked into these planes? For us to totally say he is not to blame, how do we clear him from this?
No. So I'm not saying he's totally free from any kind of blameworthiness. All I'm saying is that it must be contextualized. Mm-hmm. I think what we're seeing is evidence of a rot that has been maybe 30 years in the making. Mm-hmm. But to be fair, he's been president for 4 years, and you know it's quite legitimate to ask what he has done to begin to address. You know, the rot that has been there for quite a while. Issue of, I think, procurement and state of, you know, military hardware has gotten considerably worse. I think over the last 5 or so years, we were exposed when we had Cyclone Freddy. We couldn't even master, you know, rescue helicopters. We had to rely on the, I think, the kindness of our neighbors, Tanzania. You know, and even when the aircraft carrying the president, the vice president, crashed, one of the reasons why there was a delay, which the report has done a very poor job of highlighting, but one of the reasons why there was a delay in launching a search and rescue mission was because we simply didn't have choppers that could be deployed. You know, there are no functional helicopters that could be deployed, and you know that's something that I think those that are in charge of the state at this point in time should be answerable for. If you look at the kind of procurements we've been engaged in, it will mock any response from the government that no, we haven't bought this thing because we don't have money. Because the reality is they've actually been buying stuff. You know, they've been buying biscuits and juices for police officers, you know, so, and worth millions of dollars, by the way. You know, so you ask yourself, okay, how exactly do we set up our priorities? You know, so I do not think that it will be fair to absorb the current administration of blame 100%, just like it may not be fair to again lump you know, all the blame at their feet. One needs to have a nuanced and perhaps contextualized approach to this thing.
Now, okay, could this find... Yes, Miriam, go ahead.
I wanted to come in on the same one, saying that while we can't pin the blame on the president, I think there's a need for an overhaul, restructuring of the whole thing. Because at times the president, not once, not twice, the president had used the same blame. It would have been anyone. If it wasn't the president, if it wasn't the vice president, maybe it would have been the president himself involved in the crash. So you can't really, like Kumbo is saying, you can't really put the whole blame on the current administration. I think it's an issue of coming from way back.
Right. Now, Miriam, since you have the mic right now, could these findings influence trust in the government or aviation authorities now?
Obviously. You know, the large percentage of Malawians are illiterate, and those that hold the influence, they would say the other thing and everybody's going to persuade that side. Currently, there are alternative, I would call them alternative media platforms that are also advancing an agenda, and they seem to have a following. So if these people, since they are hate, they say, you know what, the Commission of Inquiry panelists or people were MCP members, everybody's going, those that are following them, they're going to believe them. And the agenda is going to maybe pass. So it's going to influence what's going to happen next. And if you see on the social media, the way people are responding to this, they are just saying we're going to see each other next year. That's 2025 when we're having our general elections. So it might also, you know, influence the outcome of next year's elections.
Now, speaking of these elections, actually, I was just going to ask both of you, Kumbo and Miriam, especially on what Kumbo touched on earlier about what the president could have achieved in the 4 years, to ensure that even the aviation industry is improved. But are there any discussions now that the report is out, or movements within Malawi and government toward improving the safety and reliability of air travel? Particularly, I mean, for high-ranking officials, this should be a concern for them. Like Miriam, you said earlier, it could have been the president himself. So do you see any movement as if like there's, I mean, urgency in terms of improving the aviation industry in the country?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not as optimistic. I think in this country we've got a long history of ignoring recommendations of this kind of investigations, especially where they touch on the interests of the powerful, which is kind of ironic, because you would ordinarily think that matters that concern them first would be given priority, but that's not always the case. I'll give you an example. In 2012, we lost a president because he suffered a medical emergency, had a cardiac arrest, and there was an inquiry which made some recommendations in terms of how we can improve the care of the medical care of sitting presidents. They recommended the setting up of specialized and dedicated medical units and staff. But most of those recommendations have never been acted on.
But Kumbo, when you say that the country doesn't have money, that's when Malawians come in and say, our president is always on the move, always traveling. Is he getting the money? Isn't that money supposed to be used, I mean, to improve every aspect of every problem that Malawi is facing today?
No, I think that's it's quite a fair question. If truth be said, it's a question of priorities. Like I've said, I mean, the government of Malawi has got a huge procurement budget. I mean, we're buying stuff almost every year. So the question is, what are we buying exactly, and are we getting full value for money? Because every time you procure something, there is an opportunity to cost. You're foregoing the opportunity of procuring something else. So is that opportunity to cost too high, perhaps? Unfortunately, those are questions that are answered by our politicians and the bureaucrats that run the government. But I think it's quite a fair ask to say, have we been making the right decisions when it comes to allocation of resources, which, granted, are quite limited and scarce? I think that's quite fair, a question.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Kumbo Soko and Miriam Kaliza, for joining us today here on DW Africa Link Podcast. At the Africa Link Podcast, we always look across the continent to see how the stories and issues we are dealing with play out or at times even overlap. So, what do Malawians make of the report? Here is what some of them had to say.
The report blames human error and environmental factors as the cause of the tragedy, but I feel like it gives me a lot of unanswered questions. At this point, I think we will never know what really happened because everyone who was in the plane perished. We will just be speculating, and I suggest as a country we just need to count our losses and move on, because the more we talk about it, the more we are reminded of the pain.
The report managed to touch almost all the angles which people are looking for. At least they gave us a picture of what happened on 10th June following that accident and how government handled that. A particular concern is that accident might have caused due to some negligence by people who were handling the freight, as well as the failure by the government to maybe maintain and they have a fleet that can at least carry VIP persons. This is a learning lesson. Maybe in future we might not have a similar accident as a result of negligence.
Personally, I think I'm not impressed with the results of the findings of a plane crash that happened here in Malawi on 10th June this year that killed the vice president and eight other people. I still believe that there is still more that Malawians need to know, because what was released by the Commission of Inquiry, which was said by President Dr. Lazarus Chakwera, has already been in the fore before, because it's something that we've already heard from the previous findings that have been taking place. So to me, I still think that maybe there's something that we don't know about the plane crash. Looking at the scenario, how it happened and where it happened, to me, I still think that establishing this commission of inquiry was a total waste of time.
You've just heard from some Malawians. They're expressing themselves on what they think about the report that the Commission of Inquiry has just released in Malawi. That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a crucial part of our community. Your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions, and we value your insights. We encourage you to share your thoughts with us, and remember to click follow so you can catch all of the Africa Link podcast episodes. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for listening, and until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW, made for minds.